You know, this week, the Supreme Court ruled not to rule. They ruled not to hear, basically, is how I interpreted it. But they made the news, the Supreme Court this week, in their decision, their choice, I should say, based upon Texas's new abortion law that came in, an attack on Roe v. Wade. And it made national news, which prompted me to think of Bill Anderson and just the history of the Supreme Court and some of the tough decisions they had to make and how they changed and affected our lives. Bill, good to have you back on News and Views, sir.
Well, good morning, Joel. Good morning. Yeah, thanks for a topic that would normally require a couple of years of research to adequately discuss, but we'll, as usual, you know, I'm far enough out of Texas, so I can... I've got an opinion, so that makes me an expert, I guess.
Bill, when you as an attorney, when you think of things that went in front of the Supreme Court and the courts that had the courage to look at it, what do you think of in terms of decisions that really defined and changed our lives?
Well, of course, I mean, the one that's at the heart of this question was the Roe v. Wade decision from back in 1973, and that was written by a Minnesotan, Harry Blackmun, who was had been appointed to the court by Richard Nixon. He was far from a liberal, and, you know, but yet he applied... the legal principles that are based on decisions of the Supreme Court before and the U.S. Constitution and came to his conclusion. And over the last nearly half century now, since 1973, that decision has been upheld and many times on Supreme Court decisions. So there's a lot of jurisprudence upholding a woman's right to control her own reproduction, and it would be pretty hard at this point, I think, for any court, unless it's completely devoid of reason and rationality, to overturn the principles that Harry Blackmun enunciated in Roe v. Wade back in 1973. This, there's been a lot of cases over the years that have had a tremendous impact on the history of our country. You think of Marbury versus Madison, which established the principle of judicial review of statutes passed by Congress up in 1803. Up until that point, the presumption had been that once a law was passed by the Congress, that was it. It was law. And if the Congress looked at the Constitution and said, well, this is constitutional in our opinion, that was the final say. But old John Marshall, who was a Federalist and didn't like the policies of Thomas Jefferson and his party, decided, wow, we better put the brakes on this. So he established that principle, and he did it in a very politically smart way by declaring a statute passed by the former Federalist Congress to be unconstitutional and not in compliance with the Constitution of the United States, that's been the law of the land ever since, and we've had judicial review, and like it or not, we're probably going to continue to have it because for over 200 years it's been reaffirmed and reinforced by subsequent decisions of the court. Other decisions have gone the other way. The Dred Scott decision back in the late 1850s helped propel the United States into a civil war in which constitutional questions were decided at the point of a sword. And at the end of that war, we had pretty well decided the question that states do not have the unilateral right to secede from the Union, that the federal government can and will impose guarantees of individual rights upon the states, and those things too have been reaffirmed and reinforced in subsequent decisions. Prior to the Civil War, it was presumed that states were the sole guardians of individual rights. After the Civil War, the federal government had a major role in guaranteeing individual civil rights of American citizens.
There was a lot of people, Bill, who felt that the court had become so active at times that it was legislating from the court. I think of Thurgood Marshall and the passion that he brought to certain arguments as an attorney, Brown versus the Board of Education, and how that propelled him to such a high profile that he found himself on the court for years, talking about a number of decisions. And of course, many things were challenged in the area of Medicare, Medicaid, other things. Sometimes what the court doesn't take up ends up being legislating as well, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Well,
and, I'd love your take on that.
Well, yeah, that's true. If a lower court decides a certain way and the Supremes don't want to wade into that issue and they're satisfied with what the lower court has come up with, they just don't take that appeal and they let that lower court decision stand, and that they don't have a decision on it, but yet the lower court decision then remains the law of the land, unless there's another appeals court somewhere in the country that comes to the opposite conclusion, and then the Supremes have to take it up to resolve the conflict between the circuits. So
there's a lot of people that when they look at all this, and by the way, you're visiting with Bill Anderson, ladies and gentlemen, an attorney from Rutland, North Dakota. Bill, there's a lot of people that when they look at what's happening currently, they talk about expanding the Supreme Court itself, as though by doing that, they're always going to get the opinions that they want. I'm curious what you think about expansion of the court.
Well, I mean, it's happened before. The original Supreme Court was 5. Later on, it was expanded to 7 and then to 9. And I think it's been at 9 since probably the middle of the 19th century. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says it couldn't be 25 or reduced again to 5. There could be, the only thing is the Constitution says the appointment's for life. And so you're stuck, you're stuck with that. And
is that right? Is it right for a Supreme Court justice to be given a life appointment?
Well, the drafters of the Constitution wanted to insulate the court from everyday political concerns and from having to face the voters or whatever. I suppose they could have said a Supreme Court justice is limited to one term of 10 years or 15 years or whatever. But instead, they said those are all federal judicial appointments, actually, are for life. And of course, at that time, I mean, you know, life expectancy was a lot shorter than it is today. But is it right or is it wrong? I don't know. It's what we've had for since the beginning of the Republic. And it's got its drawbacks. You know, Franklin D. Roosevelt, he wanted to expand the court. He wanted to, when a Supreme Court justice attained the age of 80, and if they didn't leave the court, then he wanted the ability to appoint another justice to the court. So you could have expanded it quite a bit. I think they had a limit on his proposal. But then the Supreme Court itself, in the Caroline Products case, which upheld Congress's right to regulate interstate commerce, the court prior to that had overturned much of the New Deal legislation that Roosevelt had gotten in place to combat the Great Depression, and the Supreme Court had overturned many of those pieces of legislation. But then the court had what was called the switch in time that saved nine, in which the court said, well, wait a minute, Congress can regulate interstate commerce as long as there's a rational basis for doing so. And that's a much lower standard than the standard for a law that infringes on a constitutionally guaranteed right, which has to be narrowly tailored to achieve an essential government purpose. It has to be the most or least restrictive possible, et cetera, et cetera. Where the in regulating interstate commerce, the rational basis can just be, we see a problem, we think this will work, and here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's there's different tests for these different for different things, and so in this case in Texas, I think that the reason the conservatives on the court did not want to hear the case is because they knew they would have to throw the Texas statute out.
Yeah.
But it
was political motivation. The problem.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, that's my opinion, like I said. And I'm more than 10 miles from Texas. So
you get to have one. Yeah. Bill, always good to talk to you. I really appreciate these times and the fact that you're retired and can't bill me. So I appreciate it, Bill. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, one of these days you'll pay, Joel. One of these days. Okay, take care.